What are you?
I'm Batman.
Welcome, podcast listeners of Gotham, to the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast look at the entire Batman franchise.
To the Batmobile! This could be the break we've been looking for!
Join Dark Knight Garrett Collins.
You look fine.
I didn't ask.
Boy Wonder Matthew Goudreau.
This is why Superman works alone.
And the world's greatest podcast detective, Adam Bunch.
Loose to plague us with his criminal conundrums.
As they look at most of the cinematic incarnations of Gotham's favorite vigilante crime fighter.
You must be joking.
Do I look like I'm joking?
From the Adam West, Burt Ward starring Batman 66.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
To Tim Burton's late 80s, early 90s take.
I believe the word you're looking for is
all the way through Matt Reeves, Robert Pattinson starring the Batman.
2 years of nights have turned me into a nocturnal animal.
These podcasters take the Rogues Gallery journey through one of the most popular comic book franchises of all time.
This town needs an enema.
So start up your podcast mobile.
Fortune smiles, another day of wine and roses. Or, in your case, beer and pizza. Ha!
And make sure your butler doesn't let your girlfriend in on the secret.
Has anybody ever told you you have a serious impulse control problem?
That the percolated media Batman retrospective begins now.
Let's kick some ice.
Batman 66. Released July 30th, 1966, budget on this was $1.5 million. Box office total eventually became $3.9 million after rentals. And this was directed by Leslie H. Martinson. Sometimes you just can't get rid of a podcast, boys. Here we are. We're talking Batman. Batman the way I wanted to do it. You know, people who remember the binge aftertaste. Old, remember that I did cover Batman, but that was with Jack. They were a good set of shows, but they were all so consolidated that nothing really got the attention it richly deserved. And this time we're finally getting to do it. We'll discuss what we're doing with Nolan in a bit, but boys, what is your experience with Batman? Matt, I know you have a huge story about this, so I'll go to Adam first.
Batman's one of those characters for me. He's just always really been around. This iteration here, the Adam West, Burt Ward, Golly Chum type of show, was one of those that was just always on TV. I think when I got up in the morning and was walking to elementary school, it was on, you know, in the morning after school in almost minute syndication back when we had all of about six channels. So it was just always there. The movie I didn't see until I was much, much older because it was just not something that I cared about because all the shows were there. And when it came to the shows, I cared about one thing, and that was show me that Bat Cycle so I knew that Batgirl was coming on. But it's, you know, in the way of Batman, this was definitely my first introduction, and it was always Bright Knight and Adam West, and yeah, it was kind of where it all started. It was right here.
And Matthew, what is your history with Batman?
I'm almost identical to Adam outside of the age gap in that Batman has always been around, and I was growing up at a time where I had every take on him at my disposal. You had this, which was a lot lighter. You had something like the animated series, which really struck the right balance. As far as tones, it's kind of the best of both worlds for a lot of people. I had both the Burton and Schumacher films growing up. They were all within my age range, although some of them were more appropriate than others. And of course, the Nolan movies, once I hit my teens, that's just media. I mean, outside of that, comics I've read for the longest of time, and he's always been a consummate, I would say he's still the most popular character in comics. For the longest of time, you could argue Superman, Spider-Man is up there, but I think Batman is the one that, especially if you look at the landscape and of how many times it's been done, forget the decades, just look at the last 10 years of all the different forms that he's been around. But with the Adam West show, I only saw reruns on TV Land when I was growing up. And the movie was really the only thing I could watch routinely because of the whole distribution fiasco. This was the only thing that was available on DVD in VHS, which I did have. So this was really the biggest piece of exposure to the Adam West run outside of the occasional episodes I would watch once in a blue moon. It's not like TV Land was a regular mainstay in my house. So that's kind of my brief history, and I also kind of talk about it a bit if you go back to the aftertaste days of the Nolan movies. So if you ever want to know my thoughts on those, go back and listen to those shows. But we're going into movies that I have never really talked about before, which is exciting. And it's taken us, it's literally taken us forever to do Batman, Garrett, just the two of us.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, like I said, I did those with Jack, and those were fun shows to do, don't get me wrong. But I had to bunch those up into a set of shows that I wasn't really proud of. With no fault of Jack's, by the way. Here, we're actually being able to do it proper because we're able to do what the fuck we want. And so I was really excited to do that. And like Matt mentioned, when we did Nolan, God, let's see, what's it been? A couple years at this point. Jack was the one who said, we got to do those Nolan movies, even though we covered them when we covered Batman years ago. I said, all right, we'll do those. And all those conversations are 2+ hours. We go into major depths. And this was Matt's idea, was to do Batman proper because of this movie that we are going to get to, starring Robert Pattinson. And so I said, all right, we'll do it. Except when it comes time to do the Nolan films, by all means, please go to Binge Media, check out those shows. But when we did those, we still had this set of movies to do, and let's talk about my history of Batman. You know, growing up, due to the Richard Donner film, I was a big Superman fan, and the only comics I really read were Superman and Spider-Man. Those were the two I just loved. And then the 89 Batman came out, a movie we'll talk about next week, changed my life, because I dove into Batman, I dove into Death in the Family. Everything I just loved about comics was Batman and Superman. Spider-Man took a backseat around that time. As far as Adam West Batman goes, don't really have a big history of this other than, and I'm sure Adam remembers this, growing up in the town we did, between the hours of 6 and 7, they played two things, the Munsters and the Batman TV show. And I sat every day, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m., watching those two shows. So I have a little bit of a history with this, but this wasn't really one that resonated with me as an angsty 12-year-old. It was about 89 Batman for me. It wasn't until later when Netflix came out and I was able to watch them at my disposal. I did sit and I watched a lot of it because my former stepdad was a huge fan of 66 Batman, and we even went and saw the Batmobile together from this movie. It was at a con that we went to together. Really, really blew my mind. And then I sat and watched this, and we'll get into the campiness of it, but this wasn't one I grew up with, but I ended up getting massive appreciation for it. And it wasn't until we did that retrospective way back when, me and Jack, that I finally sat and watched this film. I didn't even know there was a movie that came out dedicated to this show. What exactly is the history of this movie? Adam, do you have any idea?
It really was an in-between, I want to say season 1 and 2, and it was just the show, once it took off, it was just a phenomenal hit. 89 Batman, everybody remembers because the bat signal was everywhere. People were, you know, it's the joke. People were carving the bat into their head. But Batmania back in 66 was just as huge. And I can't remember what network it is really rushed to get this out and really wanted to get it done. Rushed so much that they couldn't get one of their TV stars to actually play that same role in the movie, which is why we have a different Catwoman in it. And it was just one of those. It wasn't even supposed to be the only one. They planned to do a second Batman 66 movie between seasons 2 and 3 before that hype started to slow down a little bit and they started pulling budgets and stuff already off the TV show. But it was just a, hey, this is a hit. Let's go ahead and make a movie out of it. Because at that time, you think that there's craft marketization now of everything. Holy hell, when you had something that could play the way that this did and you only had a couple channels, you pushed it like you were freaking Disney.
Ooh, a little bit of a jab there. I completely agree. It's just one of those things that it did come out, and it was not a hit. It was a massive flop when it came out. And then that's pretty much spelled the end of the TV show. It was a little after this movie had come out. So without any further ado, boys, what do you say we get into the plot of this movie? Does this movie have a plot?
It has the framework of a plot, but you must qualify this show by saying that the hardest thing this movie has going for it is taking those 30-minute episodes and extending it to feature length, because one of the biggest hallmarks of the show that you can't do in a movie are the cliffhanger
mm-hmm.
elements,
mm-hmm.
which was always a big sell. It was, what death trap are they going to be caught in, and how are they going to escape that? Tune in next week. That was a big hook for a lot uh-huh. of people. And because you're doing that in a movie, you can't write it the same way, so you have to work around it. And a lot of the elements of the show are in this movie. Like, this is not a this is certainly not taking the framework of the show and just doing a extended TV episode. It feels bigger. Like, there's definitely, it warranted a theatrical release, and you almost, there's a certain level of this show where you have to break it down to, do you find this style of humor funny? And we'll talk about sort of how it's approached and our takes on it. So that's the qualifier.
We get a full dedication at the beginning here to fans of full unadulterated entertainment. And then some surprising shadow gothic feeling opening credits. These took me by surprise.
It really looks like some of the very early Detective Comic yeah. type shots that you would have inside of it. Just the little spotlight mm-hmm. and the shadows. But it was a big differentiation that you would get between the TV show intro and this. I can't say I care for them, but I think it really shows you that you're in for something different. You're not, but it tells you you're in for something different.
Well, they don't incorporate the theme song.
No.
It's a different orchestration.
Yeah.
They don't use any of the pow and the bams. They're here, but they don't take up the whole screen like they did on the TV show. Mm-hmm. But for what this is, it lays its cards firmly on the table with what Adam West refers to this show as when he was alive. He called it the theater of the absurd. And these opening credits, I think Monty Python kind of borrowed this with the Holy Grail, where it talks about, you know, we apologize for the previous comment. Those people have been sacked. And then those people get sacked. There's a lot of...
It feels like that, yeah.
This show inspired everybody. Like, it is... Everybody knows it. Everybody has made fun of it, and it was popular enough to where when it finally got released on Blu-ray, the TV show proper, they did two animated movies with Adam West, Burt Ward coming
oh, wow.
back. Not theatrical release, but we'll give him a quick shout out here. I think they're both worth watching if you're a fan of the show. Outside of the fact that Julie Newmar being 80 really doesn't work for Catwoman in those.
Bless her heart.
You get to see William Shatner voice Two-Face.
Wow.
Who, for the record, was the one major villain that the 60s show never did, because there's a lot of conjecture. They claim that the makeup was too gruesome, and they really wanted Clint Eastwood to do it. But he wasn't.
Clint Eastwood. Jesus Christ. It was hard getting this cast back together. They almost didn't get Adam West back. He asked for more money to do this. If you watch this show, they don't really pump that much money into it. So I don't know if they were willing to do it, but what they ended up falling back on was he said, okay, then fine, I'll be in it, but I want to do Bruce Wayne more. And so that was the consolation prize. It was, okay, we'll give you more screen time as Bruce Wayne instead of being behind that mask and silly outfit. So we see a motor ride from Batman, and then they rip in, and they have been led to Commissioner Gordon's as they jump in their Batmobile and head off, complete with sped-up special effects. And then they jump in the Batcopter. Now, this is getting into 2001 levels of setup here, because like, all we're seeing are these guys going from vehicle to vehicle and then moving to place to place without any real plot going on, and this goes on for about 10 minutes.
And they called the airport and had them bring out the Batcopter ahead of time. Let these guys bring it out to the airfield and walk away.
This was the show, the creative team flexing their muscles, because with the exception of the Batmobile, all the other vehicles are exclusively for this movie. It was to show that they had more money to play,
mm-hmm.
and sort of a precursor to the Schumacher idea of more toys. This not in as much of a literal sense, because the marketing for this show was much more about the guest stars and just the euphoria, not necessarily appealing to kids. Because I always compare 60s Batman, it's sort of what SpongeBob was for my generation, in that, yes, it's predominantly for kids, but there's a lot in there for adults. This movie more so than than the show to a certain extent, but it plays on that same level where I think all generations can find something out of it if you're on board with this humor. If you're someone who doesn't like humorous Batman, you want darkness, no parents, all the stuff that Lego Batman made fun of, this is not for you.
They land with one patron saying it gives him a good feeling that they're out there doing their job. They let out the bat ladder as Robin tells Batman to watch out.
With a sign on it that says bat ladder.
With a sign on it that says bat ladder. And Batman lowers himself. Lo and behold, almost 10 years before Jaws, he is attacked by a shark.
Infamous bat shark.
You know, there are a few scenes in this movie that are quote-unquote infamous. And I didn't really know that until I watched it a few years ago for the aftertaste. This scene here is so funny to watch. You see the water's leaking out of the hole as the shark is up on him. And then he brings out, there's a spray for everything apparently. He brings out the shark spray, a shark repellent, sprays him.
And everything's intentionally dragged out in this movie to a near exhausting amount of length for certain scenes where it takes Robin forever to climb down the ladder to hand Batman the spray. And the spray also makes the shark explode. That spray must be what's in those shark air compressed things from Live and Let Die that go in that gun.
You know,
and it's so fake looking too, which makes it even funnier. That shark looks like something that Roger Corman would use on.
Roger Corman laughed at that shark.
Batch and I did a commentary for this quite a while ago for Small Screen Heroes, the running commentary. And the one thing, and it started right here, there is nothing more explosive than the water in Gotham City in this movie. Anything that drops in that water just finds a way to explode, starting with this shark.
Oh, yes. Matt, you mentioned drawn out, and I don't feel it in the first 30 minutes or so of this movie. But we're in a movie right now. I mean, you know, people laugh at Zack Snyder and how much he draws things out in his films. This fucking thing is almost 2 hours. Like, it's an hour 45 minutes. I don't feel it yet. But towards the end of this, I was really like, can you stop drawing things out, please?
If you're going to speed things up and slow things down, why don't we go ahead and keep things on 1.5 time, get through this
a little bit.
There's one scene that I think the joke is entirely how long it goes for.
Yes.
But it's very much past the point where you're like, okay, this is the definition of that.
So Batman holds a press conference as a strange lady asks Batman to unmask for a picture. Now, far from me to criticize the performances in this silly movie, boys, but is it just me or is Adam West really doing Shatner here?
It's not Shatner, actually. I think this is where Jeff Goldblum got his shtick from. I'm serious. If you watch Jurassic Park, where everything from the pauses to he'll modulate his voice here and there, it's the love child of, or I should say, this is the father of Christopher Walken meets Jeff Goldblum, where everything is drawn out. And I love this scene, cracks me up, because this is where they mention that Batman and Robin are fully deputized members of law enforcement. So they are technically almost paid employees by the police force. And that's one of my favorite things about the show, is that the satire, there's a lot more there than people are willing to give credit for. And one is the idea of Batman creating a society of dependence. If it wasn't for Batman, Gotham City would be probably blown off the face of the planet with all these supervillains running around, even in this context, because Gordon and Chief O'Hara are so freaking incompetent. Chief O'Hara is basically what Riker became on Star Trek TNG, where he is just a guy who asks questions that the other characters have to explain. Batman does all of the work. And Robin is a borderline fascist in this movie because he talks about support. One of many ways, they should have called him Proud Boy Wonder with the amount of stuff. Like, he openly says, like, support your police. There's some other great lines later on, but this police force is very much, Bobcat Goldthwait should be the chief from Police Academy, and he would probably be more qualified than anyone else.
Robin, now, I watched a TV show when I could. I haven't gone through the entire run. Do they ever explain how Batman and Robin, I know we get it later on in later versions, do they explain how Robin becomes the sidekick in this iteration? Or is it literally like, has it been Batman and Robin the entire time?
He's just his ward. He's already there in the pilot, so it's not like the first episode is them coming together. But one thing we haven't talked about is the opening scene. You'll notice there's a character standing next to Alfred who waves to them as they leave. That is the character of Aunt Harriet. Who is exclusively created to quell the rumors of any sexual relations between Batman and Robin, because it's like, oh, surely they wouldn't be up to anything if their aunt lived upstairs.
That's funny.
Because that was the ambiguously gay duo comes from this show. Even in the comics, there were all these critics who said that there were a lot of undertones. Just look at the way Robin is dressed. But my thing about Robin is that this show is the reason why no one else has really felt 100% comfortable with fully adapting the character. Everyone else tries to put their own spin on it because it's just such a hard sell. I mean, wards are not even a thing nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seldom are. Just the idea of a guy who's enlisting his teenage underling to fight his one-man war of crime against him. Just, it's a ridiculous concept. And to quote Batman and Robin, this is why Superman works alone.
Oh, Jesus Christ. As long as you don't do any puns until that podcast. And I have a feeling that podcast is just going to be overrun with puns.
Me doing Arnold for 2 hours.
That's not going to be an ICE podcast. They come to the conclusion the Riddler must be behind everything. Now, this iteration of the Riddler, we're going to see a few iterations, including the new movie that just came out. Is it just me, or is he the one who seems to be behind every... Or maybe it's the Penguin, because the Joker isn't really a part of all this, really. I mean, he's just kind of in the background this entire movie. He doesn't seem like the mastermind. The Riddler, to me, seems like the more mastermind, and he's the more, I guess you can, for 66 standards, sadistic of the three that we get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you think about it, it's really about the Riddler. You know, let's bring up real quick to start this off and where this series is also going to end here in a little bit. Realize the villains in this movie, Catwoman, Riddler, Penguin, Joker. We're going to start and end at the exact same
place. That's a great point.
It's kind of crazy as I thought about that. Mm. This Riddler, it's amazing that Jim Carrey is the campy version of the Riddler, but I like Gorshin quite a bit. I like what he does with it. He's fun without being, I don't know, without being too ridiculous. I dig this Riddler.
So, as far as the villains go, these are the big four from the TV show. These were the major players in the first season. As far as the hierarchy goes, this show was so popular that as soon as 89 was done, people are like, of course the next ones you do are Catwoman, Penguin, and Riddler. So that goes to show how popular these versions are. Garrett, you're right. Joker is the least of the four. He just gets berated by everybody else. He doesn't really have his own. He doesn't have his own scheme where he takes over part of the plot to destroy Batman and Robin. And Riddler was the one of the four that, along with Julie Newmar's Catwoman, you could actually buy doing horrible things to people when he first came on the show, the first episode. And Burgess Meredith wanted to be there every chance he got because, holy crap, there are way too many Penguin episodes of that show.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like James Bond. The villains were what people wanted to see. Those were your big names. And, you know, Vincent Price played Egghead, who was a prominent character on the show, created for the show, just because there were so many big actors who said, I want to be on Batman for just these guest spots. And, of course, these are the four that you do because you got to up the stakes, so we're going to do a big villain team up. And this is not the first time that Warner Brothers had difficulty removing a mustache from a...
God damn it. You took my next fucking line.
This is still my Riddler, is Frank Gorshin. He is... He's so manic, he's unpredictable, he's got this hyena laugh, and he was so popular that all these characters, the comic writers, were mandated not to use them because people were like, all they're going to think of is the 60s show, which is why it took several years for the Joker to become darker once guys like Steve Englehart took him on, or Dennis O'Neill, is because these characters were so popular and these were the versions people thought of for so long.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about Burgess Meredith, and Matt, that's not going to be the last time we talk about Burgess Meredith this year.
Nope, I'll be old man, can't
yep,
wait.
Yep, yep. We're going to talk about Rocky by the end of the year. I feel like Burgess Meredith was the only one of these people to actually have another standout role in his career. I know Cesar Romero had, you know, I guess he was a real popular Mexican actor, I guess. He did a lot of stuff in Mexico and some plays and stuff stateside, but I feel like Burgess Meredith was the only one to really break out. Is that safe to say?
To an extent. Frank Gorshin was one of the greatest impressionists of all time. That was really his claim to fame, was being an impressionist before the show. Like, he did nightclubs in Vegas. He was the first impressionist to ever headline a main showroom. If you ever want to see his... So he did... His big ones were Kirk Douglas, Burt Lancaster, and he did Marlon Brando. And all of them were spot on. He was sort of the cleaner version of Don Rickles, what he would eventually do. But you're right, you know, Meredith was the one that people knew in mainstream movies. Not just that, you know, he's very popular on Twilight mm-hmm. Zone.
So the Riddler, Penguin, and Joker, they're all in the hideout with Catwoman, and they're putting their heads together to talk about what to do next. as Cesar Romero is just thinking about how much to paint over his mustache. They send henchmen to Batman, and seeing these three together was great. They are just so gleeful, these three. You know, it's just funny seeing how these three are just masterminds, and they're putting their heads together, but they're still goofy. Like, this is still campy 66 Batman, right, guys?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the schemes were always... It was never about outright murder. You know, Joker was a prankster on the show. Penguin did ridiculous stuff like running from mayor and stealing the Batmobile. Gee, I guarantee these will not come back into play later.
And imagine a show like this where the entire thing is built around crime and you got such crazy standards and practices that you got to work in. And that's why, you know, we kind of had all those that we went through.
Yeah. Batman and Robin once again get in their car. They head to the docks where they climb into the Batboat.
I think we're selling another toy here, parents.
The one thing that was missing was Robin to be on jet skis in the back.
I swear, I feel like I've seen this boat, though, growing up at every Six Flags theme park for the water show. I swear this is what they did for, like, the, you know, the water ski pyramid and jumps. It was always a Batman and villain show.
Right before Jaws came out. Oh, wait, that was another series. Never mind. They head out, and they look for suspicious vessels. As we get another peek into the boat, they watch out for sharks this time as Joker orders a torpedo. One thing I loved about this show as a kid was the way they would outline to no one but us what was going on and what their plan is. You know what I'm like? Like, they are outlining everything here. They're saying everything that's going to happen. But that's only, you know, because we're playing to kids, right, guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to make sure the 5-year-old is following
along. So they turn the ship into a gigantic magnet.
They Fast and the Furious this thing up.
You know, the three of us did Bond a couple years ago, and I did get some real Bond flashbacks as we're seeing this ship, and eventually we're going to see a Penguin submarine later on in this movie.
Oh, this is from Batman with Love. Yeah. Kitty shows up. No, this is an absolute Bond-Batman movie. You actually took one of my notes, but yes, this is a Bond-Batman movie, without a doubt.
Yeah, this is Thunder-Batman with the amount of plots.
Thunder-Bat.
Be involved in this movie. Yeah, Thunder-Bat, and it's the, you know, they're sort of Bond, like the Bond death traps were partially inspired by Batman because of the, they go on this buoy and he activates the magnet and they're like, it's got us by the metallic objects that are utility belts. Because their arms can still move, so all they have to do is just take off the belts and they're fine.
A torpedo was fired, but it hits nothing as Batman repels it. Batman finds out that they have another missile, so they try to stop it to no avail and then get into their Batmobile to get away.
Because randomly, a porpoise sacrificed itself to save Batman and Robin.
This is the best, one of my favorite lines in the movie, where they do what the TV show did, where they cut away, you see the villains celebrating, they think they're dead. Instantly, Batman and Robin are on the boat, and he goes, it was very noble of that animal to hurl itself in the cabin. He gave his life for ours. And they call it out later because Penguin's like, of course there's a passing porpoise that intercepts a torpedo.
Think about it. At this point, we're about 40 minutes in? We've killed a shark and a porpoise by blowing up one.
You know, we'll have a field day with this movie.
Oh, you're not kidding.
You know, when they bring up the Penguin submarine, the periscope that sticks up out of the water, I swear that Tim Burton cribs that later for the look of the Penguin on one of his little, like, wind-up toys, because it looks just like that same little head.
So then we're getting some Riddler riddles. What does a turkey do when it flies upside down? These are, like... You know, you talk about drawn out. Is it just me, or is there just a few too many riddles in this movie that really go nowhere?
They're the machinations to get from one set piece to another. Because the movie does not have, if you're a fan of Detective Batman, this is not that iteration. And the show was very linear. It's formulaic to a fault, to the point where it is not good for binge watching.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, this is Bond getting a clue to go somewhere else,
And this movie follows that just with more money. And, again, the great deadpan delivery where the answer is a sparrow with a machine gun. And Gordon goes, oh, of course. Like, no discussion about it. He's like, oh, of course that's it.
Batman says it's the Catwoman's master plan. And then we see Riddler. He's coming up with a plan to lure Batman into a trap by kidnapping Bruce Wayne. So we've gone through the beginnings of this movie, the beginning machinations of him escaping a shark and Porpoise putting his life on the line, all these things. But really, guys, when you think about it, this is just three or four episodes melded together, right? Because now we're going into another plot here.
Yeah, it's more than one movie here, because we kind of finished with one to go right into something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's almost like an episode is an act of this movie.
Yeah.
But you don't have that suspense that the show was able to implement. But I think it works. Like, I don't view that as a negative. It's just there's only so much that you can do with, A, the budget, and B, oh my God, this TV show, and the movie in particular, also does not think very fondly of the military.
Oh.
Because there is a... They literalize playing tiddlywinks.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh yeah, we sold a submarine to a Mr. P.N. Gwynn.
P.N. Gwynn.
And he didn't leave his address.
All right, you guys talk about how bad of a detective Batman is in this. We cut to Bruce Wayne talking about Miss Kitka.
This Bruce Wayne is James Bond.
He is.
As soon as that cowl comes off, this Bruce wants to buck.
Yeah.
This is James Bond Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, this is where the standards and practices were sort of alleviated because we're approaching a climax.
Oh, yeah. We're going to see a couple things like that where you look and you're like, oh, my God, how the fuck did they get away with that? There's no way they get away with some of the stuff we're going to talk about later. We cut to Bruce Wayne talking to Miss Kitka about the notes written on Wayne Enterprises stationery as she feigns fright and Wayne is being suave. I guess this is as Adam said. This is Adam West doing James Bond, pretty much. Batman goes to Robin with more riddles. Good luck, good hunting. And then Wayne meets up with Miss Kitka again, and they talk about us and Russian relations. Boy, that's not topical now. As Alfred and Robin have no comment for what Batman and Kitka were doing. Oh boy, this is
Alfred wearing a mask.
Yes, Alfred wearing a mask.
Like,
yeah.
It's the funniest thing in the world. He's got his glasses on. He's in the butler's outfit. But just like we see here in a little bit, for some reason everybody raided the prop closet and pulled out the Domino mask and put it on.
The villains wear them later on. Riddler always has one, but like Catwoman, Joker, and Penguin puts the monocle over the Domino mask. Batman was all about promoting wholesome values in a sardonic way, because you'll notice he tells Alfred, make sure you have your driver's license.
Mm-hmm. It's
not low-hanging fruit. They're not making extensive references to the Beatles or much in the way of pop culture. It's all just little, you know, gags about the time period that it's set in.
Robin comes up with the idea of flashing the bat signal as a distraction. Meanwhile, all the cronies, they're just listening to this go down, and they set their plan in motion. They fly through the air with zero seat belts, by the way. I love this. I love seeing them up in the air in this. And they're on these vehicles, just kind of chilling out in the sky. And they have no filtration against the air. We have no mast or anything at all. And Joker, he comes barging in, and the fight begins in true Batman 66 style. Except no words appear on screen during punches. This was weird.
Yeah, I was really expecting the biff, bam, pow.
Yeah.
When you've had it, you recognize that it's not there.
I guess we're having Batman grow into it? I guess, I don't know. Like, where is the biff, bam, pow in this? It took like an hour and a half for us to actually get any of those. By the way, the flying through the air, it also reminded me of the scene of the bad guys in Superman 2 just taking Superman and Lois to Superman's home, you know, when they're just flying through the air.
That's right.
Wayne sees Catwoman and wonders where Miss Kitka is. Obviously doing his great detective work. And by the way, we need to mention, too, and Adam, you mentioned this in the beginning, but this isn't our Catwoman that we've grown to love on the TV show. This was...
Here with her for the first time.
And last
time. Yeah, and last time.
And last time.
Why didn't we get the other Catwoman in this?
There was, I guess, this was a go, and then it wasn't going to be a go. So in the meantime, she booked something else for the time that they were going to be doing this movie. And then... This was a go. They called her up and was like, yep, we're going to do it. And then she could not get out of the production she was doing, which never even came to be.
Wow.
So she missed out on, I want to say it was called like Lecoq. Swear to God. And that never got made, but she never got to make this either.
Hmm.
Yeah, and then Julie Newmar got replaced again. It's so funny that Riddler was also recast, eventually played by John Astin. We had three Mr. Freezes, all played by different actors. It goes to show that, you know, even a show like this, you still had to, sometimes the characters were more important than the actors portraying them.
Mm-hmm.
At least with those. Like, obviously, if the opportunity presented itself, they would have had to recast the Joker or the Penguin. But there's a part of me that wonders if they would have actually gone through with it or just not used them.
Wayne tells Kitka there is nothing to look forward to except death, which is so uplifting, by the way.
Romantic.
Yeah, so romantic. As Joker and his cronies continue to listen in, Batman gets loose and we have another fight, again, with zero words. That bums me out, man. That bums me out that we don't get any of the words during these fights.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
He ends up jumping right in the water and he gets back to headquarters and heads down the Batcave. They bring the Batmobile out. Meanwhile, Penguin's men, they come in with a bunch of quacking instead of whatever noise penguins make. And I was watching this with Jen the other day. And Burgess Meredith, he was known for this. Like, he just keeps making mat, mat, mat sounds in the background. And Jen's all, that's not a duck. Like, he's not a duck. He's a penguin. He's got to make penguin noises.
That's her issue with
Yeah,
this.
That's her man. That's her one issue.
That's her line. You know, I gotta say, when we go into the Batcave, it becomes really apparent that Bruce Wayne's not the richest man in Gotham City. The guy who makes custom printed signs for whatever you want around your house is the richest man in Gotham City. Because everything has got a sign telling you exactly what it is.
Yeah, whoever owns the label maker distribution. I still made a fortune, but you also skipped over, you don't get the sound effects, but you do get a dummy flying through the air.
Yes.
Exploding. With a,
yes.
I think that's a fair compromise, if you ask me.
They turn men into dust using the Ultra Dehydrator. And I love that they're all perfect piles, and they make the cat pick up the cat litter.
Yeah, but this has hands down my favorite delivery in the movie because it is played so straight. It's after they're dehydrated, and Catwoman's sweeping them up because, of course, the woman has to do it. But Penguin says, be careful. Every one of them has a mother. That is my favorite line of this entire movie. He delivers it so perfectly.
It was around the time they started bringing the dehydrator in, though, that I was like, okay, let's get on with it here. How much longer? I was checking my watch throughout the course of this. And that's the thing about comedy is you can take comedy, and yeah, we've been having a good time laughing at it, but honestly, watching this is a lot less fun than talking about it.
You got to get a crowd to watch this together, and you got to be in the right frame of
Absolutely.
Mind.
Absolutely.
It is not a solo watch.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what me and Jen were doing. We were sitting, we were watching it together, and even she had to get up every once in a while and kind of keep herself occupied because this movie does not keep you engaged, at least me. You know, me as somebody who didn't grow up with the TV show as much as the Burton stuff, I was getting kind of bored at this point. Were you guys kind of feeling the same?
Right here, yeah. I know where it's going, but this is also, it's the big turning point where, as you kind of already mentioned, we go into a second story for the most part. So there's a pretty big shift. It starts to wear already. It's kind of when you look and go, we're about two-thirds of the way through. Ah, fuck, only halfway through. So, yeah, you start to feel it. Though I got to say, this dehydrator kind of reminds me a little bit of a water evaporator that Nolan did.
Absolutely.
66 did it first.
I can't say that I'm bored because I find this movie absolutely hysterical. But again, I've seen the entire show, so I think I have, of the three of us, easily the most affinity for what this show, and in particular what this movie is trying to accomplish. And I think it's firing on all cylinders. It plays like a greatest hits, and it doesn't even have Batgirl in it.
Yeah.
Who I don't think was even introduced on the show yet, so I don't think they could have.
They run through the docks, throw the batarang, and climb a building using a very familiar way of doing this special effect. This was a famous meme a few years ago of them just climbing this building. That's pretty fun stuff.
Yeah, no guest stars, though, which is weird because you would think with the budget they could have gotten big names, although on the show they got, like, Sammy Davis Jr. It's not like they were devoid of big stars.
That was such a big part of the show is you kind of wanted to see who was going to show up if they climbed a building, who was going to stick out the window. It was a moment. It was a thing. So, of course, they're going to have somebody big for the movie. So, yeah, a little bit of a letdown because, you know, Matt, as you said, like getting Sammy Davis Jr., that's the type of thing you'd expect for this. And for it to not happen, kind of like the bit, bam, pow, you miss it a little bit.
Yeah, and it's a lot of what Puzo's script for the first Superman movie 12 years later did. That script, it wasn't really in the movie because Donner changed it, but you'd see things like Kojak kind of roaming around saying, "We got you, baby. Who loves you?" You know, and that's all stuff that was done for that script, but Donner wisely nixed it. We'll get to that probably within a set of years. But I like that on the TV show as well. I do remember that, where random people would show up as they were going up this building. That was always fun stuff. And by the time this had come out, nobody was cramming to be in this anymore, I guess? Or did they just couldn't afford them? So we then get to a scene that even people who haven't seen this movie have heard about. Even I had heard about this before I'd even seen this movie. Batman finds a bomb. He is caught out in public, running around with this thing from place to place while still burning in his hands. This scene, I will admit, after a set of minutes, probably about 20 or so of me saying, okay, can we get on with it? This had me rolling, this scene. Every time he gets near the water with this bomb in his hands, Jen would say, why don't you just throw it in? And then she would put her head in her hands. See, when he would just keep running. Matt, this is glorious, is it not?
This is one of the funniest scenes ever put to celluloid, because it's not just the fact that he's running around with this bomb. That's funny enough, because it is the stereotypical Chuck Jones black ball with the long fuse. What makes it worse is that he keeps running into the same groups of people. It's not throw everything at the wall. It's he runs into the same group of nuns. He runs into, there's a group of ducks. There's people pushing their kids in carriages. He's so wholesome that he can't put other people in danger. And the fact that he can't get rid of it in tandem with the way that they block this sequence is what makes it as funny as it is. And of course, the some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. Like, that is the calling card of this movie as far as quotes go. Mm-hmm.
You know, in comedy, they mentioned that, you know, something starts out funny, then it grows old, and then you keep at it and it becomes funny again. And this, it's time that it stops being funny is very, very small. Because it's great from beginning to end. There's nothing. He is so earnest as he's doing this. Adam West is playing this like he's on stage doing goddamn Shakespeare. No, he is the perfect personification of this level of Batman. In this scene, and everybody, if they have one thing they quote from this movie, some days you can't get rid of a bomb. And there's, it peaks it because of just how great it is, but this scene alone, you want to put something in to laugh, and it keeps going, and keeps going, and it never stops being funny. It's just, yeah, it's great stuff.
So he comes up to Robin and says he lost the trail of Miss Kitka. And holy costume party, that Brassy Bird Penguin gets caught in the break and that they've been looking for.
Again, Robin being a condescending asshole who thinks he's Mr. Superior, where he goes, Batman, you risked your life for them?
Yeah.
And he goes, they may be drinkers, Robin, but they're still people.
They're still people. They load up into the Batwing and head into the Batcave. Penguin goes to the hugely labeled water dispenser. He rehydrates the other guys. Again, you guys are perfect when you say the label maker is the one who got rich off this movie. Batman says they were under the influence when they were rehydrated. Penguin knocks Batman out and tries to get away, but nope, here's the Bat Cycle. Now, Adam, did you have any of this? I had a lot of the Burton toys, but did you have any of these toys growing up? Because I sense that, you know, even then, that as you mentioned, that the marketing for this had to be out of control, right?
Yeah, I don't think I had any of this level of stuff. I mean, by the time I was watching it, it was a syndication type thing, and I think the rights and licensing deals, and it's why it hadn't been out for so long until very recently. It was just a fuster cluck of contract problems. I mean, take it back to Bond. So because of that, I don't think there was a lot out, you know, as we were growing up that we even could have bought. But I don't remember having any of this toys or, you know, a Batcave or anything else, really. Maybe a model, like a snap-together model of the Batmobile would have been about it.
They disengage and load into the Batcopter, right back into this. The bad guys, they launch some missiles as the Batcopter heads down into the Foam Rubber Wholesalers Convention. Fucking shit.
It seems like a Seinfeld.
It
sounds like something George would be
doing.
It
really does. The missile has the wherewithal to write out a couple more riddles because it's up in the air. And there we go. We got some more riddles being done by this missile. Batman and Robin, they make their way through the city, and the bad guys go through the door no longer in use. which is great. And then the scene of them running, too. This is another famous scene of them just running through the city. So campy. Again, I said I was kind of tuned out towards the middle of this movie. By this point, by the time he's gotten the bomb and we're here, I'm back engaged. Adam, are you feeling the same? Are you back engaged when they're running through and everything?
You know, I wonder how it would play if I was watching it on TV with commercial breaks, but they didn't really set it up for that. But as a movie, it's got some issues, but I'm back having a really good time at this point. I'm enjoying the camp, the campy caper. I'm right there.
And Matt, as the person who pushed and pushed and pushed to do this series, you're probably having a great time at this point too, right?
Yeah, and again, it's going the extra mile. Once they land in that foam rubber convention, Batman is such... He's always portrayed in the show as overly confident to a fault, and he says in, you know, this boisterous way, of course, I did manage to spot this out of the corner of my eye. It's as if he's saying, there is no such thing as chance because I am Batman. I know every single way out of a given situation.
So they go to the UN, or what's supposed to be a representation of the UN, I guess. And, of course, they're able to get in and gas up the entire building, right? They make their way to a meeting, and then they disintegrate the entire table. They end up little piles of dust that they pick up. And Jen noticed something, and after doing research, I did pick up on it as well. The Asian turns into a yellow pile of dust.
Uh-huh.
My God. Yep.
Speaking of James Bond problems with Asian culture.
Unfucking believable. Could you imagine if they did that today? Could you imagine the outcry?
There's all the outcry with the new movie because there's the Asian guy that gets beaten.
Yeah.
At the end, so.
Can't believe people threw a fit. Yeah.
Mm. Batman and Robin, they get there and they see the entire council has been taken out. We see the penguin-shaped submarine head down further as the bat boat approaches and another missile is launched. They take evasive action, as they say, and the missile barely misses them. They let loose of the bat charges and then hit the submarine with a bunch of apparent weak-ass direct hits. The submarine comes up as everybody gets out, and there's yet another fight. This time, we get the words on the screen, and man, was I happy. Finally see the words happen, and that was my favorite part of the show as a kid, was when these scenes would happen, I would scream at the screen, bam, pow, like every time. It never failed.
And I think it's what it's designed for here, is to give you, you know what, you know you're in a climax, you know you're in a finale, and we're bringing the biff, pam, pow, mm-hmm. right, big ass on your screen, full Technicolor, and they're bringing it loud.
Catwoman throws Batman a cat, and it acts like a big old steroid fur ball that Batman has to fight with. Huge, epic ship battle ensues with Batman and Robin getting away, and they also land all the UN members as the hope of the world. And then they enter the super dust separator. This whole scene of them
And Robin argues for eugenics.
They put their pandemic masks on.
Oh, God. I would love to see this show do COVID.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Oh, God. Are you fucking kidding me?
Stealing toilet paper, even they'd be like, oh, that's good.
And they say they're ready to rehydrate. They set up the rehydrator, which was a garden hose. They turn it on, and it's a success. The United Kingdom is speaking a foreign language, and Batman proclaims it the greatest service known to man. Oh, boy, this last leg. You talk about farcical. My God. It just doesn't stop. Their job is done, and they leave conspicuously, which marks the living end of the movie. What was that about? Why did it say the living end instead of the end?
Because the show was going to keep going.
Okay.
But the fact that it takes so long for them to rehydrate and you hear the dripping sound,
yes.
That is the one that they extend for just the right amount of time. I think it justifies the length because it's like you're anticipating everyone popping back up. And again, I still can't believe Robin argued for his own form of a master race. And you'll notice that when they all rehydrate, those devices don't go away. So everybody should have been impaled on those protruding spikes when they sat down. Not like those evaporated.
And that does it for Batman 66. Oh boy. Man, what an hour 45 minutes this was. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Batman 66? I have a pretty good feeling I know where Matt's going. Adam, what about you, sir?
You know, Batman 66 is one of those movies that for everybody there's a nostalgia factor of one way or another. And much like Burt Ward's crotch, sometimes you got to tape the dick down a little bit as you're watching this thing and decide how you're going to enjoy it. Sorry, that's about the one thing we didn't get to discuss. This encapsulates pretty much everything that the 66 series is, minus Batwoman, Batgirl, as we discussed. So if you love 66, I think you're absolutely going to love this movie. If you want something more lighthearted, but you want the villains that you know, those top-tier villains, those A-list villains, they're here. Batman's premier rogues. It doesn't explain where Batman came from, how they got together. It's just it's a caper. And it's an animated caper told in live-action form. So your mileage is going to vary, I think, a little bit based on your mood. If you watch it with somebody, if you're in for just a good old time, if you're sitting down hoping for a old chum, let's see how good of a movie they make. That's not what this is. It's a live-action cartoon, and on that level, they really, really come through. I'm not going to give it a great score because, you know, there's some issues in it with pacing. I got some problems here and there, but it's an enjoyable watch to put on any time, have in the background, watch with a buddy, knowing where we're going to go elsewhere, knowing that we're going to go down, we're going to go up. I'm still happy to watch 66. I'm glad we're starting off with this, and I'm going to give it a strong 7.
7 out of 10 from Mr. Bunch. Goudreau?
So everyone can calm down. I'm not going to proclaim this is the best Batman movie ever made, despite my glowing praise of it. But I am going to go similar to a score that I gave to one of the Nolan movies. I'm going to give it the same score I gave The Dark Knight. I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10. Because you have to judge it based on the approach to Batman. Does it succeed in fulfilling what it sets out to do? And I think as a fan of the show, which I am, but not to the point where it is binge-worthy. Like, if this show is cake, you would go into a diabetic coma with trying to binge it, because it does get a bit formulaic and repetitive. But as a greatest hits and sort of an all-star showcase of what the phenomenon of the show was, it accomplishes what it wants to do and does it pretty effortlessly. I think the only reason I can't give it a 9 or a 10 is just because of the certain trappings you can't duplicate in a movie that they could do on the show. And I do kind of wish Joker got his own little piece, because I do like Cesar Romero's take a lot. And you'll notice, if you've ever seen The Dark Knight, the mask that Joker wears at the beginning is used in one of the episodes. So even Christopher Nolan, of all people, who is Mr. Serious and probably wouldn't know a joke if it bit him on the ass, would find stuff to take from this series. So I'm at a strong 8 on 10. I find this movie a blast every time I watch it. And I'm glad we're starting out on this, because I feel like this gets overlooked, because it is as much of a cultural mainstay as what Tim Burton's movie would do for the landscape.
And people say next week's movie's The Dark One. We're going to make arguments, I believe, that it's just as campy as this in certain points. You know, the thing is, though, I was engaged and I wasn't engaged. I was engaged and I wasn't engaged. I think if you did not grow up a fan of this, and this is the time we live in now, you know. I mean, growing up, Adam, you know, when you and I had Batman 89, this was the thing that our parents watched. Now we have the Pattinson Batman, and this is the thing that you and I watched. And our kids are watching the new Pattinson film, even though I don't have kids. I know you do. But I look back on this probably the way a lot of kids nowadays look back on 89 Batman. I can't watch this. I'm sorry. It doesn't hold my attention as much. And, you know, it's not just because, you know, we don't have Detective Batman. We'll talk about how I feel about Detective Batman later. It's not because it's not the Batman I grew up on. It's just the humor in this can only go so far with me. The parts I like, I do really like, though. But it's about, I'd say it's about 20 minutes too long. And the way Adam West delivers these lines can only hold my attention for so long. I'm going to go 5. It's not terrible. It's not good. It's just right in between. I wish I liked it more, but I was bored. And I cannot endorse something that I was bored by as I was watching it. That will lead us to 89 Batman next week. Matt, what are your memories of 89 Batman? Because I know me and Adam actually lived through the 89 Batman. What are your pre-podcast thoughts going into next week?
So it's a movie that I have seen an exorbitant amount of times, but when I was a kid of the ilk, when all the movies were out, this was not the one I watched the most, which is not to preview my thoughts, just there was one that I watched on a loop, and when I say which one it is, it'll explain a lot about my own worldview, but it's a movie that nowadays I don't go back to it all that much, because we've had so many other versions that I just prefer, and I can't say that my opinion has... I never say when I sit down and watch it, which I've done a few times, is my opinion going to change? I never have that feeling. So that's kind of my take. And because I didn't grow up with it in the same vein that you guys did, I don't have the cultural attachment that a lot of people do. I didn't see this in the theater. I wasn't around for the marketing. I wasn't a Prince kid growing up. I was just a bit too young for, you know, because I was not even born yet when this came out, or when Returns came out for that matter. So,
oh, God damn it.
It'll be a few recordings before we get to a Batman movie that was released in my lifetime.
Adam?
I'll save most of it for our next talk, but I remember being in the theater, 12 years old, my uncle taking me, my cousin Jennifer, at one point my cousin, who I want to say is about 5 years older, leaning over and going, "You're laughing at that enema joke. Do you even know what an enema is?" And having explained to me at 12 years old in the movie theater. And seeing this movie around the corner from a place where you would live years
yes.
before we would even know each
yep.
other.
And I...
And that's where I saw it.
I saw it at that exact theater.
So it yeah. was it was big. I remember the marketing. My views on the movie have evolved a little bit over the years. That's going to be interesting to discuss, because whether or not I go back to it often is something I think we'll be discussing too.
Yep. This was a movie I lived through. I was through the roof hyped up for it. And we'll discuss next week. Pattinson wasn't the first Batman to get lambasted before he even stepped foot on the screen. And we're going to experience that a few times in this retrospective. The backlash against Keaton in the lead-up to it was one of the first times I remember going through movie magazines and seeing, oh my God, why are people hating this before we even see it? So that will be interesting to discuss. Also, the phenomenon, which, with the exception of Star Wars, the biggest hype machine I had ever seen. There were interviews, there were music videos. I even had I went to the theater in a t-shirt that had the Batman emblem on it, which was the big thing to have that summer and that year. I was sucked up in it. As far as my thoughts on it, we're going to save that for next week, but let me just say that I have thoughts. But with that in mind, Batman 66 is finally in the rearview, boys. So let's hand down the shark repellent and head right back to the podcast cave. Thanks, boys.
Was good, his was better.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast.
I read your work. Insightful. Naive, but insightful.
Join us next week for an entirely new review.
Ooh. Talk about your cold shoulder.
Just a note, the three Chris Nolan films are not going to be part of this retrospective, as they were covered by Matt and Garrett on the Binge Movie Aftertaste just a few years ago.
Never rub another man's rhubarb.
To hear those takes, please head over to www.bingemedia.net.
Okay, go ahead. Intimidate me. Bully me if it makes you feel big. I mean, it's not like you can just kill me.
Actually, it's a lot like that.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
Tonight's forecast, a freeze is coming.
Voice narration by Adam.
I hate when people talk during the movie.
Edited by Garrett.
That miserable, waddling mountebank of a bird. He couldn't finish a bag of popcorn.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is for review and discussion, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such. We'll be right back.
ago, so many people to kill, so little time.
Bob, gun.
This is the best, one of my favorite lines in the movie, where they do what the TV show did, where they cut away, you see the villains celebrating, they think they're dead. Instantly, Batman and Robin are on the boat, and he goes, it was very noble of that animal to hurl itself in the cap. He gave his life for ours.
He did it on purpose.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Stop it.
That's the one joke they did.
Yeah, I know.
I know.
Bob, gun.
It's not like they were devoid of big stars.
We didn't get to it.
That
go
was
ahead.
Such a big part of the show.
Go, Adam, start that again.
On the show, that was...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
That was such a big part of the show.
Bob, gun.